Hello and welcome to the Reign of Blood podcast, brought to you by the Reign of Blood Festival team. So this is the podcast where you get a behind-the-scenes look at the con and the Sharps and Bloody Kingsters all over the world who will be celebrating with us. So this podcast is intended for mature audiences who have an interest in, well, blood and Sharps-based kinks only. So if that's not you, then this podcast definitely is not for you. So these are real stories from real kinksters, and so they may contain discussions surrounding things like health, mental health, kink, blood, self-harm, traumatic experiences, and more. So if you're having a rough day or these topics could be distressing for you, then we would advise you to come back when you're more ready to enjoy the topic with us.
Live.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
Hey, amazing Sharps players. Welcome back to my dungeon. I'm really excited to introduce you guys today to Miss Sox. Sox is going to chat to us about her upcoming class, which we are super excited to attend at the Reign of Blood, and introduce herself a little bit. So a huge, big South African, very hot and sunny welcome to my dungeon. And it's lovely to have you here. Thank you so much for the privilege.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's just been amazing to connect with so many different people and have such a huge education in such a short space of time regarding needles and blood. It's been, I think I understand when they talk about frenzy now, because I'm just living my dream. Like, I don't think it gets better than meeting amazing humans like three times a week and chatting about needles and blood related things. It's awesome. So very excited, and you come highly recommended, and you have some people who speak really highly of you. So I was a bit nervous about this interview, but I was assured that you are really a superhuman. So I'm excited, and I'm excited to see your class at the Reign of Blood. It's something that I don't have much experience in. Maybe we can start there, and you can just tell our listeners what class you're running and what they can expect a little bit.
So the class is called Phlebotomia. It's your basic blood draw and collection class. I recently became a phlebotomist and just fell in love with it. I figured, do what you love, right? And it's really become like my entire life. I absolutely adore it. It's not so much like working, because it's just playing with needles all day, but not so much in like the fun ouchy kind of craze that we do in a dungeon. But the class will teach you how to safely draw blood from a venipuncture, so from a vein, with actual phlebotomy supplies if you feel like purchasing them, or just from a needle and syringe if that's easier for most people. And then also how to store and keep it properly so it doesn't spoil.
Oh, wow. That's really exciting. We've done a lot of the YouTube videos. We've tried to research it a little bit. We always come short when we go to the supply store, and we give them this list of the things that we need. And they look at us with a frown and they're like, nope, you can have a butterfly needle and that's about it. So we are a little bit limited from a supply store point of view. So excited that you're catering for all of us, even the ones in Africa with limited medical supply store supply stores to shop at. So that's really exciting. And yeah, my journey with blood has been relatively recent in my kink journey, but it's something that I found just the most incredible release with. And it's It's like a freedom that I don't know how else to express. And it's very quickly become one of my favorite kinks. Do you maybe want to tell our listeners and tell me a little bit about how you got involved in blood as a kink?
Oh, wow. So it's actually been a lifelong fascination for me. Ever since I was very, very little, anytime I scraped my knee or cut my hand or anything like that, the blood, I was always just so fascinated. What is it made of? What's in it? You know, I even tried to keep some of it when I cut my hand open on a rock when I was a little kid. And obviously it didn't work because I didn't know how to, and the internet wasn't what it is now. But I became a teenager and the fascination just became more and more. I eventually at 18 found kink through just some random party I was at. It just happened upon me, which was pretty cool. And I learned a little bit about it in the first couple years, but not too much. And on year three or four of me being in the kink world, I found FetLife. Nobody had told me about it yet. And I made a post asking if anyone wanted to teach me blood play in a Los Angeles Needles group. I got one response, and he's been my blood play partner for the last 7 years. It's been a wild journey of just exploring everything and anything that we can.
Oh, that's amazing. FetLife is still, it's still, especially in my community, we do a kinky class on a Wednesday night, and we have a lot of vanillas, especially swingers, come to our class, and they're always like, what is FetLife? So it's strange to hear that even after all this time, it's still a little bit underground, especially in some societies like ours. It's quite, you know, we sort of say, yeah, it's a kinky Facebook. And there's like gasps because they don't even believe it exists. And then we just corrupt them completely. So lovely to hear that you met your partner and that you're playing with off FetLife and it was successful for you. We're talking about a kink here that is, it has its own risks. Are there certain things that you use to mitigate the risk in blood play, or that you can advise our listeners from a risk point of view in blood play?
Absolutely. I'm actually a really good person to ask that question to. For the first 6 years of me doing active blood play multiple times a year, I was severely immunocompromised. So my immune system was suppressed due to a health condition. And you really have to be on top of cleaning and showering, always wearing clean clothes. If you have a deep wound, you know, ensure that it's bandaged properly, or even if you need to butterfly close it with some butterfly sutures or even real stitches if need be. I don't know about other countries because I've never lived in another country, but here it's generally not weird going into a doctor's office or a hospital being like, hey, I need some stitches. They won't ask a lot of questions just because Los Angeles is pretty weird, but it's really just about being on top of your cleaning and ensuring that you're using sterile equipment. I've only ever had one instance of an infection, and it was pretty unfortunate. I was playing with a friend, and I don't believe it was anybody's fault. You know, we were using a knife instead of a scalpel like I normally do. And it just, one cut got infected. And I think it was a combination of things. Maybe the environment we were in wasn't too sterile. You know, I might have leaned on a St. Andrew's cross, and that cut touched the St. Andrew's cross and got infected. So it's really just about being vigilant and ensuring that your open wounds don't touch dirty surfaces, you wear clean clothes to bed that night, and you really just pay attention. You have to be hyper aware of everything your body is coming into contact with to ensure that you don't end up with some sort of infection. And that goes for cuttings, or especially cuttings, but even needles. You know, it's still a puncture to the skin, and it's still an open wound. And a lot of people don't think about even the tiniest of needles are still open wounds, and you need to clean and sometimes bandage, depending on the person, to ensure that you don't get an infection.
Yeah, I love that. And it's such a good reminder. I think when I started in kink, the information was minimal that I had access to. So I think part of what we're really trying to do with Rain of Blood is give people some 101 stuff that they can take back and they can think about. I think that a lot of the time, kinks like blood play and needles, maybe more blood play in my mind, though, it's almost like the forbidden fruit, and it's gatekept a little bit. People don't share the information. And I really believe, and it's been spoken about a couple of times recently, that there needs to be a gold standard if we can show people the right way to do things that sits in their mind. You can't unsee that. And once you've seen it, you'll strive to reach that, even if it's not obtainable the first time you try it. So I really appreciate you sharing information like that. You obviously have some requirements for a setup or rituals that you sort of go through before you set up. Do you mind telling us a little bit about what those look like to you and what the experience is like for you when you do it?
Absolutely. One word, tarps. Tarps are your best friend when you're doing blood play, unless you're in some sort of room that you don't mind cleaning afterwards. But a tarp is your best friend when you are doing blood play on a larger scale, like cuttings. You want to really make sure that whatever surface you're on top of is completely covered. And I always have tarps. I just go to a local hardware store and buy them in like packs of 10. And they always just stay in my car in case I'm at a dungeon and, you know, somebody forgot one or bought a tarp that ended up being too small. I don't mind, you know, sharing that kind of comfort, you know, knowing that you're not gonna turn a room into a biohazard. But a setup for me normally looks like a lot of tarps and ensuring that, you know, the one on the ground is taped down. You want to ensure that everything is sterile until the moment you use it. That means if you're using needles, you don't unpackage them until you're about to use them. And for scalpels or any sort of cutting implement, that it has been thoroughly sterilized and kept in a place where it's not going to touch something that's dirty. I've even done some wild performances where we have apparatuses and I'm hooked to something, and setups could be very different for different people, but the basics are always there. Tarps or some sort of absorbent pad. I like to use, I call them puppy pads. They're like those little absorbent pads that you get for your puppy when they're learning to get potty trained. They come in handy. You know, they have a plastic backing and just loads of what I assume is cotton in them, and it absorbs everything that it needs to without bleeding through. I personally like painter's tarps because they're very similar to that absorbent side. They have a cotton top with a plastic bottom, but they can be huge. You know, I buy 20 by 20 ones sometimes, so they can cover an entire piece of furniture or the floor or even sometimes the walls. You just want to make sure that you're not turning a room into a biohazard that needs a lot of time to be cleaned.
I totally relate to that. I do a lot of CBT, and there's generally a lot of blood involved with that. So those puppy pads are like my life. I buy them in packs of boxes of packets now. I don't even buy them in packs. And I quite like the idea of that painter's tarp. I'm going to have a look for one of those. We use a white plastic, but more because the blood is really cool on the white plastic. It's very expressive.
White painter's tarps. The ones that I get happen to be blue, which kind of sucks. I just haven't found them at my local hardware store in white, but I've seen them. I've seen other people have them in white, the painter's tarps.
Yeah, and I have to go back to what you said something a little bit earlier about leaning on a St. Andrew's cross. Like, I think knowing what happens in the dungeon, like, and having a plan for setup that includes covering absolutely everything with plastic is like my first step when going into a public play space, just simply because I know exactly what's happened on some of that furniture, and I don't want to think about it, and I don't want to have to relive it. So it's a great reminder for the public to just think really carefully about where they're setting up, what's happened in that space before they've got there, and how they can look after themselves to the best of their ability. And you've mentioned some great ways to really set up well for yourself. The only thing I'd add to that is I have this enormous roll of plastic that I cover everything with, because I feel like the whole Dexter effect is part of my kink. I like the idea that everything's pre-wrapped, but some really good reminders. Your plays sound incredible. It's hard for me across the sea to imagine this stuff, because our community is so, blood is so taboo here. I do think I'm the only girl that's been spanked with a needle paddle and had a lot of blood in a public situation in my community. So maybe you can share a little bit of your memorable blood play with us, if you're prepared to. I'd love to hear a little bit about stuff that you've done that you've really enjoyed and the experience that you've had.
Yeah, you'd actually be surprised how minimal it is, even in a large kink city like Los Angeles. We are still very far and few between in the blood world out here. It's becoming a little bit more popular, just because, like, as you said before, it was a little gatekept before. When I first started, it was really hard to find people that were curious. And I feel like after the whole shutdown a couple years ago, the curiosity is back. And when we do demo booths for needles where people can do a little tasting, try their first one, it's packed. So it's becoming a little bit more normalized here, but it's still very taboo here. We are the outer realm of the kink world, even in Los Angeles, which I find very funny sometimes, just because everyone here in Los Angeles is weird and we're deemed the weirdos of the kink world.
It's okay, I relate so much to that, because I'm also like, we also, the blood players here are the weirdos of the kink world, and we're probably the most researched and the most dedicated to process and the most dedicated to aftercare and self-care, and there's a whole bunch that comes with the kink, and it's also probably, we probably leave the space in better condition than we found it when we use it. So, you know, I just think, and we also don't take up that much space. We take up less space with the needle session in the corner and this sort of intimate little play than somebody would do need sort of 6 meters for a flogging or a whip or something like that. So I always have a smile on my face, because I think, you know, you just don't know what goes into it. And I think some of that is fear.
Absolutely fear. Needles are a really common phobia. So, and, you know, the thought of the inside of your body potentially being on the outside of your body, I feel like that scares a lot of people.
I find it quite sad, because my experience with blood and the release that I've had from blood play is, it's such a freedom. It's like all the negative drains out, and it just heals back with self-love and self-care and Yeah, it's just a total reset. And I also find the recovery from it much easier than something like heavy impact or like a whipping or something like that. Something with adrenaline, a huge adrenaline or fear in it. I don't find any fear in needles or in blood play. So for me, it's never a fear play. It's always lots of laughter, lots of happiness, lots of serotonin, I think. I just hope that people can recognize that that there is some freedom in it, and that it's okay to explore this kink. It's really quite beautiful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I also feel a massive freedom. For me, it's the feeling of blood dripping down my body. It's like every bad thought, bad feeling, stress I've ever had in my entire life is leaving as it drips down the side of me. And that's why the main thing I do is cuttings as a bottom. I normally do it about once a year, sometimes more, depending on if, you know, how much stress I'm dealing with in life. But you asked what some of my most memorable blood play scenes have been. And oh boy, I've had a lot. I mean, it's 7 years of just amazing times with the same partner. He knows me so well, and he's such a sadist. I absolutely adore this man with my entire heart. He's the kind of sadist where, you know, you'll look at him in the eye and be like, oh my god, like that really, really hurts, and he just laughs at you and goes, shut up, you're fine. And it it makes it so much easier, you know, because he's not freaking out, so I'm not freaking out, even when I am kind of freaking out. So I think recently, one of the most, I will never forget this ever, and the pictures are on my Instagram and FetLife if anyone wants to look at them, but we did a Hellraiser scene back in November, the beginning of November. He's wanted to for a couple of years, and we just didn't have the opportunity to, and my birthday's in November, so I was like, let's just do a insane Hellraiser homage performance, and it was wonderful. He built this contraption, like this archway that had chains, six on top and one on each side. And I was not suspended because they were very small hooks, but it was a hook pull, so a flesh pull. Three in each arm and one on each side of my boobs. And it was unbelievable, just like that pulling pressure. I love hook suspensions. I don't do them very often because it's hard on my body, but just being able to, I don't know, like feel that tension kind of makes you relax, which sounds a little backwards, but it was pretty amazing. Lots of needles in my face, through my cheeks, needles all over my boobs. And, you know, you spoke about a needle paddle earlier. He just found one and, you know, they turned me around and gave me some spankings in my butt, my thighs. I had massive bruises, which I love because I don't bruise very easily. And it was really amazing, and I needed it so much, you know, right before my birthday, just a big bloody mess. And it was really fun. I would love to do a performance like that again.
Oh, you say ticking all my boxes, and that's probably the hottest scene that anyone's described to me in the entire time that I've been doing these podcasts. It just sounds absolutely amazing. Yeah, that pull on the skin when the flesh extends and you get that it's really intense, and then all of a sudden it sets, and it's like a freedom, like there's no other way to describe it. And then there's just, my soul's like exalted when that happens, because I think it's a bit of an accomplishment thing as well, like it's an achievement, like I've managed to do it. So I completely relate to what you're saying, like it's just the most incredible feeling. I have to also say that the recovery from suspensions for me was far harder than I ever expected, and I think mentally as well as physically, so not just a body thing. Like I found it took me 3 or 4 months to come back to earth properly and to really just completely check back in with myself and align again. But yeah, definitely like bucket list stuff. Like I quite like preparing for them too, and I setting a goal and working towards that. I think that's half the fun of the kink for me.
Yeah, I'd wanted to do one for years. I actually met when I was 18, someone who was in a hook suspension group, and all he wanted to do was suspend me. I have really stretchy skin, I guess, which is perfect for suspensions. And he was just like, come on, just fly with me. And I just wasn't ready for it. I was like, I want to so badly, but it is terrifying. I hadn't even experienced the tiniest amount of real blood play yet. And I eventually did it 2 years later, maybe 3 years later. And it was mind blowing. I got the perfect setup for it too. I do a position called the hammock. So it's through one in each knee and then one over each shoulder blade. And you're kind of like sitting like you're in a hammock. It's really comfortable. But we were in a park overlooking a lake right at sunset, and it was incredible. Just the perfect moment for a first suspension. It was unbelievable. And I've done 3 in total with a couple hook pulls in there, just, you know, one single hook or a couple hooks attached to, you know, some sort of not moving apparatus. And, you know, you just kind of sit there for a couple minutes, just stretched. And it's a really beautiful feeling of flying, you know, like I feel like that's as close as I'll ever get to flying on my own, just suspended from a tree. It was really beautiful, but the healing process, it really is something else. People try to prepare you for it and everyone heals differently. For me, it was pretty hard on my body. So I don't know if I'll ever do one again. I would like to, but I really got to space them out.
Yeah, I feel that. I prepared physically. I thought I was super prepared. I was running. I was super fit. I was drinking so much water. I was hydrated. I was eating well. I was sleeping well. I had like the physical side, I thought, down pat. I mean, I woke up the morning after that suspension and I just realized that there is nothing on the planet that somebody can say to you until you've experienced it. You don't know what this feels like. It was epic. It was insane. For a couple of months afterwards, I think still just took me a long time to download it. But yeah, definitely do it again. But I agree with you. It's something that I plan in years, not in weeks. So but huge respect and loved listening to you share that with us. Is there something else that you've done bloodwise that you found really interesting or unusual?
Yeah. So I 2 years ago. God, time flies. 2 years ago this month, actually, I started a scarification piece on my right forearm. And we did something called an ink rubbing, where they rub tattoo ink into the artistic scarification piece. It was pretty insane. I really could not believe for the couple days afterwards that I actually did it. I'd wanted to for years. I follow scarification artists on Instagram and I loved them. And then I saw an ink rubbing for the first time, and they normally do black or red, because most inks won't hold in the scar. But we did green because it's ivy on my arm. And it's probably one of the coolest things I've ever done in my life. We set it up where we like did a tattoo stencil on my arm, you know, so that like sterile ink kind of a thing. And we spent, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes just carving into my arm. And it surprisingly didn't hurt as bad as I was expecting it to. I normally do my cuttings on my back. they're not very artistic on my back. I call them my gills because they look like gills on a fish. They're all like straight, kind of slanted lines. And that's kind of how I just wanted them on my back. But this one on my arm is, it's absolutely beautiful, and it's green, and it stayed green for 2 years. So I imagine it'll stay green forever. But it was fascinating just watching the healing process go by. It's a rough healing process because you have a completely open wound. It's not like a small cut. Like, these are deep enough to where they scar really intensely, and not deep enough to where you would need stitches. But still it's a very open wound, and you have to keep it saran wrapped for 10 days to force it to heal from the inside out, so it doesn't scab. And you have to like wash it 3 times a day with like antibiotic soap. And I was rubbing ink into it for 3 days, and I adore it so much. It's just absolutely beautiful.
Oh, your voice when you say that, you sound so happy. It's so beautiful to listen to you talk about that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I've got the biggest smile on my face, and I've been trying to learn a little bit more about cutting and scarification. I have been tackling butternuts simply because we had an epic amount after a season on the farm. And I have been trying to just get better control over depth and all kinds of things. And then I had a really weird incident. I slaughtered my butternut after I'd carved it and had an allergic reaction to the butternut. It's actually called squash hands. That's a real thing. I'm probably the only person on the planet that it happens to, but my hands all shriveled up. And so I'm now looking for something else that I can sacrifice for my cutting practices, because it's so beautiful. It's I think the artistic cutting and the scarification is so incredible. It's a little bit for me, I cut when I was really much younger, sort of in my early teens, and it's sort of just reuniting my head with a self-harm practice that used to have a negative connotation back to something that I am doing for the love of art and something that's beautiful. So it's been a bit of a long journey for me, but huge appreciation. And it's so beautiful to hear your voice when you speak about it, because it's something that you can hear you just passionately love. It's a privilege to experience this through you.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that I had actually done it. I remember sitting at work the next day, just being like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that, with like utter shock in my, you know, in the voice in my brain. And then 3 seconds later, I'd be like, oh my God, I cannot believe I did that. And I would be so excited. And then 5 minutes later, it was, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. Did I really freaking do this to my arm? And then 10 minutes later, it was, oh my God, I'm so in love with it. It was just a battle between, I'm terrified of this healing process, and I can't believe how beautiful it is. And it, for the first time in my life, besides like a surgery scar, it keloided in some places, which at first I was a little upset about. But now that it's fully healed, and you know, 2 years later, I kind of like that certain parts of it are raised, because it gives it this depth that it wouldn't have as just a flat scar. And I used to want to, the goal originally was to continue it up my upper arm, but I just don't know if I want to go through that healing process again. It's all part of a big tattoo that I'm planning on my right arm, of morning glory flowers and ivy leaves, but I've yet to start the tattoo aspect of it. But yeah, I truly do love this piece, and people still ask me about it, you know, how it's healing. And it was such a big thing that happened in our community, because our community is massive here, but in my local dungeon that I work at, everyone was like, I can't believe you did it. Let me see. Like, oh my God. Everyone was just so fascinated. I think it was the first big artistic piece that was like publicized, you know, that like the whole dungeon knew was going to happen, and everyone was excited to see how it turned out. So it was really, really cool.
Oh, I'm very envious, and I'm going to go and have a good look for the pictures of it now, because I'm dying to see it too. And if we ever meet, that's the first thing I'm going to ask you as well.
Yeah, they're on my FetLife somewhere. You'd have to scroll down 2 years ago. But yeah, there's pictures of the process too. I posted like a little quadrant of four pictures of the process of us doing it. And then I think one or two healing pictures of it, you know, like 10 days later and then like a month later or something like that.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm definitely going to go and have a look. You mentioned a little bit about your local dungeon, and I know that you are, well, I think if I'm correct in my assumption, that you are a DM at your local dungeon and you work pretty hard promoting community like that. I just wanted to say, to ask you, you know, we all look at this as like, this is bucket list for a lot of us. You've mentioned a couple of times the player that you play with is some that you have this cubic depth of relationship over 7 years with, and I'm privileged enough to have the same in my community. Like my switchy sister has been on this ride with me forever, so it's really great to be able to have that connection. For people who don't have this connection, what are some green flags look like for hooking up with somebody to do types of play like these, and what are some red flags? What would you really avoid?
I am a DM. Well, I'm in charge, actually. I'm the head DM of our dungeon. So I've been running that place from like the security side for the last, I don't know, maybe 5 years. And I've really learned a lot about how to just not like judge somebody after a 5 minute conversation, because that's not great. But judge somebody from watching 5 minutes of play, because somebody can sound great or sound awful when you have a conversation with them, and then you watch them play and they're super safe or super unsafe. So a couple green flags would be a lot of care and concern for their partner, you know, a good negotiation. If you are trying to do, I don't know if you guys use the same term, but I call it pickup play, where like you pick up someone that night. But if you're doing pickup play and the person you want to play with is like, cool, let's just get down to it, that's a huge red flag. But if they're like, hey, let's, you know, find a quiet corner and talk for 10, 15 minutes and figure out what each other wants, huge green flag. Like a full long negotiation, or even, hey, how about we get lunch and do negotiation and then play at a later date? That's a really beautiful thing. Just because you really want to get a feel for what your partner or temporary partner wants to happen, and especially what they don't want to happen. Something I always tell newbies at our newbie event every month is you may not know what you want to happen, but you definitely know what you don't want to happen. So I always start off with, these are the things that are a hard no for me. And if you're the person you're talking with kind of scoffs, or, you know, oh, well, what about this with just me? That's a huge red flag. The pushing your boundaries when you've already set a no is a huge red flag. And you know, you really, it's all about respect, a give and take of respect. You know, even as a bottom, you have to respect your top's no's. If there's something that your top doesn't want to do, don't pressure them to do it. And, you know, those red flags show up in both tops and bottoms. You know, I've definitely seen my fair share of bottoms trying to pull a certain aspect from their top that they just don't have or don't have any want to do. But that's another good green flag.
Why are you thinking about that? I think admin is actually my kink, probably more than shops. It's quite sad, and I don't admit this very often, but we've actually put together negotiation cards that we use for our 101s and for our newbies, so that they have like a baseline to start with, so that they have some questions that they can, you know, use to gain information. Because I'm always trying to promote the fact that consent is not permission. Permission can be part of consent, but you need to have all the information and the capacity and the boundaries, and then you guys need to align ethically before you take the plunge. And that doesn't happen in 2 minutes, and you know, you need time to think about it and time to digest it. So I really loved what you said about go and have lunch with that human, just make sure that you're all aligned. Like at the end of the day, I think there's a fair amount of trauma bonding that happens in dungeons. So make sure that you're trauma bonding with someone that you've put some effort and some time in, and they're somebody you want to trauma bond with, not just because they're there. So I'm not a big advocate for pick up play. It doesn't work for me. I need a lot of information from people. Part of the play is very mental for me, and I want to know that I've ticked all the boxes, and as a top and as a bottom. But I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just not my style. But we do quite a fair bit of like spanking benches and stuff like that at club events, and we're always trying to promote just a little bit of like inquiry and negotiation before the play, because it's important that you have the information. You're not just giving somebody permission.
Absolutely, yeah. It's we also at our newbie event have these cute little business cards that have like a acronym that you follow to start a negotiation, which I really love. Because a lot of people don't really know how to negotiate, and they don't, especially when you're new, you don't know what the vastness of kink is quite yet. You have a very small view of it, and you know, bad things, I was going to say can happen, but bad things do happen, you know, and they happen to everybody. And sometimes it's somebody's fault and sometimes it's not, it's just an accident. You know, but you need to know how your partner is going to react to that accident. And I also, not anymore, don't really like pickup play, just because I know what I like and I know I'm not going to find it in 5 minutes. But I'm all for pickup play. I love it. I love watching two people meet that night and, you know, and then I see them together for the next 5 years or something. But it's when bad things do happen, you really need to know how each other is going to react. And that is also a big red flag. If you use your safe word, even if you just say, hey, can we pause for a second? Like, I'm not safe wording. I just need a moment to breathe. And your top reacts poorly to that. That's a big red flag for me. They should understand that this is an intense thing that we're doing. And sometimes you need a moment to just catch your breath or maybe start hitting a different part of their body because that part's getting a little too sore, you know? And God forbid if you do have to safe word because they did something wrong, or maybe, I don't know, an intrusive thought popped in your head and snapped you out of, you know, headspace, that they respect that. You know, I've unfortunately seen it too many times where I hear someone say, you know, yellow, and their partner just keeps going, and I have to step in as head DM and be like, hey, that means check in. You need to take a minute to see what they're yellowing about. Why are they saying that?
I think you've hit on a really good point. I think a lot of the time the yellow and the red are not about you. They're about the person calling it, and everybody needs to be present to participate in the kink. So sometimes you just check out. Sometimes you're just not in the space anymore. Something else has come into your head and it has nothing to do with your partner. And people need to be able to be accountable and, you know, and not take out their frustration on others. So yeah, I really love that. that. We have a ridiculous thing at the moment in our community. I don't know who invented it, but if you put your finger, one finger up in the air and you like swirl your hand, it means purple, I'm bored, move on, which I think could have like really bad effects on the wrong sadist. But so we're really, really just trying to promote that as well. It's lovely to hear that that your community is doing the same and that it's important to you. I have to ask you, the one question I still have after reading everything is, why Miss Socks? Why the name Socks?
It's actually not a great story. It's not a great story, but it's just really basic. I'm obsessed with socks. Like, I have more socks than I do anything. I have an entire dresser just for my socks. And the kind of bad part of this story is that the person who gave me this nickname is a horrible human being. He is absolutely just bottom of the barrel. There are no green flags in that man. It was all red flags, and I was just too naive to see it. And the only thing I didn't let him take from me was that nickname, because it fits me so well. I love it more than I do my real name. I actually hate my real name. And only one person in my life outside of my dad and sister call me by my real name. And it's because he met me in the real world and now we're dating. And, you know, he just doesn't see me as Socks because we met, you know, in the vanilla world. But I don't have a single friend who doesn't just go, yeah, you're Socks. Like, it's just who you are. And I have some really awesome socks.
I love that, and I love that you've reclaimed it and that you've made it yours and that you've kept it. I've really enjoyed chatting to you tonight. If there are any people that want to reach out or get in contact with you, and do you want to drop your socials for me and tell these people where they can get hold of you?
Yeah, I just drop it in this little message box.
Yeah, or you can just tell them now on the air. Yeah. And then I'll put it in your bio as well.
Okay. You can find me on FetLife. Just send a message, please, so I don't think you're just some random person. But it's Miss Socks, MISSSOX. One word, no dashes or anything like that. And I'm pretty cool about responding to messages on Fet. I try to respond to almost everybody just because I never know who's going to be messaging me and what their questions or concerns or whatever are. And then I have an Instagram, which is also one long word, The Adventures of Socks, also SOX. And that's private, so you're going to have to send a request. But I normally accept pretty much everybody onto that one, because if you're adding some weird, creepy fet life, then I know you're also weird. So, you know, feather, birds of a feather and all that jazz. But it was great chatting. This was so much fun. I'm really excited to see how Reign of Blood plays out in a couple months, and I'm super excited for it.
Thank you so much. And we're just privileged to have you as an educator, and I'm really privileged to have this chat with you. It takes the solitary confinement of this kink in my own community, and it just opens so many doors in my brain, and it just fills my little black heart with joy. It really does, and lovely to connect with you and to have the privilege of listening to your experiences. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was amazing. I was truly surprised to hear that someone was doing a blood play convention, but I'm so thrilled about it. It was very surprising, but a very good surprise. I'm very happy that there's enough people who want to show the kink community that we're not like the pariahs, you know, like a lot of people kind of think that we are because we do the scary stuff.
Yeah, and I'm going to close on that note, and I'm going to tell all my lovely listeners that if you don't have a ticket for Reign of Blood, you better get your ticket for Reign of Blood. If you're not listening to more of these amazing podcasts, I don't know what you're doing with your life, because there are some incredible humans out there that are chatting to us and sharing the authentic stories and helping all of us connect. So tell your friends, buy a ticket, And we can't wait to open this up in April. We have an on-demand, which will be running from the 1st of April, which will have all our 101 classes that are downloadable for anybody with tickets. You'll be able to pop on there, download what you need, spend the month looking at it. And then we have the Rain of Blood at the end of April, and it's 3 days of incredible educators, incredible information, and just bucket list experience and the chance to connect with this community and to make some friends and to feel that you're not so alone. So if you haven't got a ticket, grab one. I'll be back. It was lovely speaking to this amusing human tonight. And yeah, I hope that all of you stay sharp. And from me in Cape Town, South Africa, lots of love and kitten kisses.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thanks, Socks. You're incredible.
You are too. This was so.